Greetings, and welcome back to the Rose Bros podcast. This episode, we are joined by Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at GasBuddy.com, a technology company that offers mobile applications and websites for tracking crowdsourced locations and prices of gas stations in the United States, Canada, and Australia. Patrick has analyzed oil markets since 2005 when he and a professor at Grand Valley State University launched a blog that shared oil market insights and predicted gas price movements. Patrick then went to work with GasBuddy.com in 2009, where he does petroleum analysis and regularly provides commentary to U.S. news and international media outlets. Patrick is also a graduate of DePaul University with a degree in business economics. Among other things, we sat down and discussed 50 cents a liter gas prices during COVID-19, North American storage levels, summer demand, and the best place to find cheap gas. Enjoy. This podcast episode is sponsored by Konate Water Solutions. Do you need cost-effective water sourcing options to supply your next drilling or completions program? Konate Water Solutions is a specialized hydrogeology company focused on water well drilling, testing, and water management services in Western Canada and Texas. Contact info at konatewater.com or check out konatewater.com for more details. This podcast is sponsored by headracingcanada.com. Looking for high-performance ski gear this winter? In partnership with four-time Olympian Manny Osborne Parody, HeadRacingCanada.com is offering the lowest prices possible through its online storefront by passing brick-and-mortar savings on to customers. Check out HeadRacingCanada.com for more info and get your high-performance ski gear for the upcoming season. Good morning, Patrick DeHaan. Thank you very much for doing this.
No, thanks for having me.
For the listener, you're the head of petroleum analysis at GasBuddy.com. What is GasBuddy.com?
GasBuddy is a price tracker of gas and diesel prices, basically the Yelp for C-stores, if you will. We track gas prices at 150,000 gas stations in the U.S. and in Canada as well. We cover all 50 states, every single Canadian province as well. With ratings, reviews, we even help people save with a payments card that links to a checking account. So that combined with the smartphone app that you can download on your iPhone or Android, GasBuddy exists to help people find their perfect pit stop and to save money on gasoline and diesel.
Today, I think we'll maybe break the conversation up into two halves. What is GasBuddy and how it can help customers? And then maybe we'll get your thoughts on petroleum macro a little bit and how things are looking right now for supply demand. But I guess the obvious question for anyone listening is, where is the cheapest gas in North America right now?
Well, you know what? Looking at averages, which is probably the safest, sure bet, Mississippi tends to be one of the cheapest states in the nation, thanks to low gasoline taxes. The statewide average there, $2.99 a gallon. But if I look around, there tend to be some outliers here and there. You can find it for as little as $2.60 in Odessa, Texas. Mississippi, you can find it as low as $2.67. So well under $3 for some of the lowest prices. But looking today, kind of at a different way to look at some of the lowest data, the cheapest 10% of stations in the country today, averaging about $2.92 a gallon. So still a lot of stations at or below that level. So, you know, all in all, not too bad, especially compared to a year ago.
For the Canadian listeners, do you have the cheapest gas in Canada at your fingertips?
Yeah, we do. Right now, Alberta, leading provinces with the average price of 140.7, BC all the way up at 193.2. So a pretty spectacular 53 cent a liter difference between those. If you were to talk about the lowest station in Canada, well, looks like a few stations in Stoney Plain, Alberta at 123.9. So pretty astonishing to see price in Canada, you know, 123.9, especially considering a year ago, prices were, in at least Alberta, 50 cents a liter higher than where they are today.
And for reference, today is June 21st, 2023. So that's an important part of the data on the day of the year or the day we take this podcast. So on the flip side, where would you see the most expensive gas prices?
Well, we'll start with Canada. Since I have it pulled up, BC tends to be the winner there. Some of the outlying provinces, Northwestern Territories, you generally can see, you know, when we get some of that data reported, because it's pretty sparsely populated, some of those stations can come in and out of nowhere basically take that title. But right now, seeing a couple stations in BC at 223. One station at 213.9. So, you know, it's generally a little easier to find the high price stations because some stations just don't compete. Now, going down to the states and looking at some of the highest prices there, generally Hawaii, California, you know, you get out to those remote locations. California right now, a station in Needles, which is pretty far out there, 649 per gallon US. Station in Hawaii at 558. So actually, it looks like California takes the crown there. That one station in Needles does come up pretty often. You get a bunch of stations out in the middle of nowhere, California, and you just have taxes and just kind of the rural nature that gasoline's coming from a pretty far away. So closer to $7 a gallon at the Sly Park Country Store in Pollock Pines, California, $6.51 a gallon there. That officially is the highest price station in the U.S.
The misconception is that gas companies or the gas stations are gouging customers, but in reality, a big chunk of the increasing price is taxes. What proportion of the rising price is due to taxes for the consumer?
Well, you know, a lot of the comparisons that look at, you know, the previous record for the price of oil in 2008, when oil hit 150, you know, the national average in the U.S. hit 410 a gallon. And now we're roughly half of that. And we're only 60 cents below that, right? Oil price is $70 to $75 a barrel, and the national average at 355. And taxes is kind of the wild card that a lot of people don't think about, because in the last 10 years, I would probably guesstimate that, you know, half of the U.S.'s 50 states have increased gasoline taxes, sometimes very substantially. And so making that comparison, if you don't factor in how gasoline taxes have gone up, you're obviously going to be led down a road that, oh, hey, you know, stations are charging more, or oil companies are charging more because they get away with it, when in reality, there could be things like state gasoline taxes that have gone up. States like Washington also have recently implemented a cap and trade program. So, you know, aside from fundamentals, that can shift between, you know, comparisons. 2008, we had a lot different, you know, we had a lot less U.S. oil production. Now it's been an issue of refining capacity. A lot can change. And to your point, you know, a lot of that can be gasoline taxes, but also specifications for gasoline can change over time. Things like sulfur content. Gasoline has had less and less sulfur content because the EPA, the entity that regulates emissions in the United States, has improved the specifications for gasoline. So there's also the technological cost of removing things like sulfur and adding to the refining process, which makes things more costly.
What portion of the gas price at the pump is taxes?
Well, it does vary state by state, but the national average right now at about $3.55 a gallon in the United States, according to the American Petroleum Institute right now, the average is about 57 cents of every gallon goes to gasoline taxes. So, you know, without any taxes on gasoline, the national average would be below the $3 a gallon mark. So again, it varies. Some states are much lower. The states where gas prices are lower tend to have very low taxes, and places like California, where gasoline taxes are very high, have the highest. So like I said, the average though in the US is about 57 cents. I'm not aware of an entity in Canada that tracks the average, but consistently speaking, HST, GST, carbon taxes are much, much more of a cost on gasoline in Canada than the United States. So that's why Canadians, you know, oftentimes we hear, oh, don't complain, California is, you know, $4.50 a gallon. But in Canada, the equivalent can be well over $6 a gallon, because Canadian taxes do amount to a lot more than they do in the United States.
The foundation of GasBuddy.com is quality data. How does the company ensure the data is of high quality and make sure that your analysis are coming out correctly?
You know, we have the benefit of having 11 million prices reported to us on a weekly basis across the United States and Canada. And amongst that, you want to have diversity in your pricing sources so that you're not too reliant on one or another. What we do, we have in-house clearinghouses for data. That is, we run them through a proprietary process. We have three main sources of our data. One is crowdsourcing. That's certainly a big one. That's kind of the bread and butter on how GasBuddy started, was crowdsourcing. We also obtain information from the transactions run on our Pay with Gas Buddy card, which is a great way to triangulate data as well. And we also have gas stations that opt into some of the programs that we offer and submit prices directly to us. So amongst those three different sources, we have great ways to triangulate if we get a fat finger price or if a consumer, you know, when prices were volatile last year, it was hard to keep up on consumers, you know, typing it in. Were they seeing price at $5.55? Was it $4.55? So we've even had to deal with this kind of new era of prices that have been all over the map, right? Within the last year, we've had prices 3, 4, 5, and people would sometimes misremember that first digit. So being able to triangulate that data with transactional data, which doesn't lie, and with station data, which is generally potentially better quality, helps us triangulate some of that crowdsourced data, which, and crowdsourced data is probably, crowdsourced data along with data directly from stations is probably our highest frequency of data. So being able to ping those off and being able to remove those few prices that may be, you know, suspect, it's a very easy process. But sometimes we still do have manual checks if there's something that's up in the air or if for some reason we're not able to triangulate. Sometimes we resort to the old-fashioned way of doing things, which is manual verification.
To give perspective, how many data points go into a average calculation or to a final result on the gas price in any given day? Is it millions of data points or what goes into it?
Yeah, I would estimate it. It does vary by a day simply because, you know, as consumers are driving, they drive more on the weekends, even later in the week when more frequent number of gas stations visits is happening, we get more data. And so, you know, the averages depends on the area, really. You know, an area that is poorly populated, sparsely populated, is quite rural, our data quality may not be as great as it might be in a big city where there's millions of people driving around on a daily basis, where there's transactions happening, where there's, you know, a lot more visibility just because of the amount of population. So, you know, just like all data sources, we do best in big areas where there's a lot of people driving around. An example might be like a gas station in a national park. We may not get as much visibility on a daily basis simply because there's not as many people going by the station. There's not as many transactions happening, et cetera.
When it's wrong, how do you correct it? Because ultimately, there will be a data error. Is there a way to correct errors or how do you deal with that part of the process?
Well, a lot of the time, errors are removed before they're even live on our site, meaning that if there's something, you know, a red flag, if the number doesn't jive with those other pricing sources or previous prices, generally it doesn't even get added to our database. It's red flagged and removed before it's added. So, you know, that's the biggest thing is, you know, when it comes to crowdsourced data, you look at reliability of a user, how long they've been a user, how long their prices have been in line with what our system is expecting. So we have expectations, you know, when somebody submits a data entry, our system will be expecting a certain price range, depending on where the station is. And we triangulate even using nearby stations. For an example, if there's two stations, kitty corner, if we get a price that's reported that's vastly lower than the other station, right, there's great ways of triangulating that and then the data sources. So a lot of the times those erroneous or potentially erroneous data points aren't even added because they go through the data clearinghouse, like I had mentioned, before they become part of our database, before they're used in calculations. So if the data doesn't pass those sniff checks, it doesn't get added. So most of the time, you know, very rarely do false data points get out into the wild, so to speak, where they're part of our database. A lot of the time, the process that we run through will strip that bad data, that noise out before it's added to our database.
The nature of oil prices is that they're volatile. In the spring of 2020, when oil went negative, do you remember the cheapest gas price you saw in those weeks in US, Canada?
I do remember, I do remember going to a station even. Some of the lowest prices were under a dollar a gallon. They didn't last long, but, you know, April, I think it was late April of 2020. I think it was almost April 27 is when the national average bottomed out at $1.76. that was very close to the day that I got 99 cent gasoline just outside Janesville, Wisconsin. And that's also the last time that I believe in Canada, we saw some sub 70 cent a liter prices in Alberta. They didn't last long, but there was that brief window. But yeah, you know, there have been times over the years, I'll remember high scale price wars that happened, I think, in 2015, 2016 in northern Michigan, simply because I'm a Michigander, born and raised in Michigan. And I remember distinctly that a couple of stations engaged in a price war in which the average or the two stations all the way went down to 47 cents a gallon. But yeah, you know, there have been some pretty wild price wars, especially in that 2015, 2016 window where OPEC opened the spigots up. They drove the price of oil into the ground. But yeah, you know, during that one day prices went negative, it was such a brief burst that most stations, you know, didn't even get the chance to pass along the lower prices because they went back up so quickly. But I do remember the spot price for gasoline in Chicago, I believe, had dipped to about 25 cents a gallon, meaning that the wholesale price, excluding taxes to the stations, may have been somewhere well below the dollar a gallon range, probably closer to 45 or 50 cents. And, you know, that's why some of the stations in Wisconsin got below a dollar a gallon temporarily. I think one station may have got down to 76 cents. But yeah, you know, just highlighting how crazy, how much of a disruption there was to the demand aspect of the fundamentals, right? Supply and demand, and demand had just plummeted overnight.
I remember I have a picture of it one day in that spring, gas in Calgary was about 50 cents a liter, which is
wow,
very rare.
Yeah. You know, you probably count on one hand how many times you've seen that. And again, you know, the question is, will we ever see that again? And it's really a question of, will we ever see some sort of crazy abnormality, some pandemic, you know, some drastic overnight change to supply and demand? I think COVID's really the only one we've ever seen that rises to that level, right? That and maybe an artificial, you know, if OPEC were to just say, hey, we're going to open up the spigots. But again, you can never predict if those prices are going to return.
Do you remember the time prices were at their all-time highest?
Yeah, just a little over a year ago, it was madness. You know, prices in Canada averaged over $2 a liter. And in the US, we averaged over $5 a gallon. It was a very busy time because the question back then was, is it going to stop? Are we going to run out? You know, there were a lot of these exceptional, salacious headlines, you know, even last fall, that the US was going to run out of diesel, right? Some of these prominent political talking heads planted the seeds that the US was going to run out of diesel and that prices for diesel were going to hit $6 or $7 or $8. There were a lot of these false prophets, basically, right? Advertising that prices were going to reach astronomical highs. And a lot of that didn't materialize because it's probably easier to find an apocalyptic prediction last year than it was a rational one, right? Even the banks, JP Morgan suggested the US average was going to hit over $6 in July, and it didn't get real close. So, you know, we've come a long way, but last year was just pure madness, fed by a resurgence after COVID and, you know, a major oil producer in Russia engaging in a war that was generally frowned upon by global economies and global countries.
There's the physical market for oil, and then there's the financial market for oil. You have your eye on the data and a lot of the news headlines and narratives and whatnot at gasbuddy.com. In your experience, how much has the financial markets and the kind of news headlines and narratives impacted price? Is it becoming more and more of a problem?
Well, it varies year to year. The market last year, because of some of the margin requirements from the board, you know, CME, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and some of the trading exchanges raised the margin requirement. So, you know, they basically raised the requirement that you have to have additional margin available because the price of oil was so volatile that they didn't want to get caught in a bad trade. So boosting the margin requirement basically meant less liquidity because less people had the margin requirements to play. But over the years, you know, speculation's always had a role in prices, and people try to bet to make a profit. You know, last year when oil went negative, a lot of that speculative money, you know, somebody lost billions of dollars. It's, you know, kind of like the collapse, right? The wolf of Wall Street. You know, for every story about oil companies making billions in profits, somebody else on the flip side, when oil went negative, lost billions of dollars. So, you know, I think all in all, we've seen that the market's become more volatile, although a lot of that volatility was because of the exceptional circumstances last year. Things have really cooled off. you know, the market's more stable this year. And with margin requirements now being reduced after they increased last year, there may be a little bit more liquidity coming back. And that could mean, you know, more speculative positions. But, you know, overall, the amount of open speculative positions has seemed to decrease because I think there's more opportunity out there right now in growth and other areas like stocks, right? Some of that speculative money is not tied up in commodities. Last year was really the year for speculative positions and commodities. And this year, it's really calmed down quite a bit. But it does have a role. You know, people speculate on prices and that can have a minor impact on you know, what consumers are paying. But the bulk of what we're paying is still based on supply and demand. And people, you know, jump in based on what they see 6 months down the road. There's still speculation. But keep in mind that the active driver of oil price is not speculators betting on positions. It's fundamentals, supply and demand that drives some of those speculative positions.
Speaking of fundamentals, what are storage levels looking like as we head into summer in the US and Canada? Are they record high, record low, or is it about average?
You know, it is a bit tight still. It's a little bit of an improvement from last year. That's a pretty low bar though, because last year things were so tight that we obviously saw, you know, $5 and $6 prices for gasoline and diesel. So while there have been incremental improvements from last year, looking at the EIA, which is kind of the gold standard for petroleum statistics and supply statistics, inventories are still tight. Gasoline inventories in the U.S. are up 3.4 million barrels from last year. That's 1.6%. But they're still 7% below the five-year average. Distillate inventories are even tighter. They're up 4.1 million barrels, which is about 4% from last year. But they're still 14% below the five-year average. So, you know, a slight improvement from last year, you know, of the fundamentals of the balance of supply and demand, the real improvement this year hasn't been supply, but the real improvement has come because demand is much weaker than it was last year. And a lot of that because the economic uncertainty, the slowdown in the U.S. and global economies as monetary policies become much tighter. So overall, supply in the U.S. is down about 4% from last year.
How about the SPR? What are the numbers suggesting in that case?
You know, the SPR is about 31% below last year. So it too is a bit tighter. Obviously, the U.S. has been releasing oil from the SPR. Where we are now is the required sales as part of the 2015 budget agreement mandated a certain drawdowns in the SPR. And that's where we are today, is that those 2015 mandates of sales are wrapping up. But of course, the Biden administration back in 2022 also released 180 million barrels from the SPR because of the unknown brought on by Russia's war in Ukraine. Would the flow of oil be disrupted from a lot of the sanctions? So the SPR is now still just a little over half full, but about at 352 million barrels compared to storage. That's about 700 million barrels. So we're just about at that half full SPR mark. But the good news is, the administration has talked about and really has taken some tangible steps to suggest that it will start filling the SPR back up when it is advantageous to do so.
The big question is supply and whether the various factors impacting supply and traditional energy are going to crimp supply. In your opinion, do you think that increased supply is coming, aka people will get back to drilling, kind of greed will factor in again, or are we in the era of limited supply and that this is kind of the new normal?
Well, I think last year we saw a lot of activity, right, which responded to oil prices that were over $100 a barrel. And now some of that optimism has faded. U.S. rig counts are tightening. And so we're not quite in a position right now where growth is looking to increase at an aggressive pace. I think the return to drilling has slowed down. And there's a lot of uncertainty over the direction of the U.S., Canadian, and global economies. The resurgence of demand from China that had been expected as they reopened post-COVID has been disappointing at best. So last year, where there was a lot of optimism in the oil patch, I think we've seen a bit more pessimism. Along with that, the global transition to things like electric vehicles have maybe soured some of the attitude about increasing oil production globally. I do think that there will be increases, certainly in oil production, but potentially not at the more aggressive pace that you would have anticipated, given how high oil prices were last year.
What are rig counts at this year compared to last year?
Well, looking at Baker Hughes, the rig count right now has been declining almost on a weekly basis as oil prices have come down, at least in the U.S. Rig counts are down about 53. Now, that's total oil and nat gas rigs are down about 53 from a year ago. Just in the last week, the U.S. lost another 8 rigs. It's currently at about 687. Whereas Canada, there has been a little bit more drilling activity. Rig count is up 3 in Canada from a year ago. The last month that international rig counts available are from May, and that was looking pretty solid. International rig counts were up about 150 from last year to about 965. So there is some optimism in some places. Some countries, you know, continue to invest in oil and natural gas drilling, but other countries, you know, in the U.S., the pace has been a very cautious pace. That is cautiously increasing drilling where it makes sense, and not drilling where the cost of replacement is high.
The, I guess, narrative right now is that U.S. shale isn't growing the way it used to be. Is that true? Are you seeing that, or is that false? Is shale, U.S. shale still growing?
Well, I think it is, but it's not at as a robust pace of growth as it was, you know, years ago when money was just pouring into shale. You know, we've seen CEOs from some of the shale producers indicate a more cautious approach on increasing production, you know, using technology to increase where it does make sense. I think they're going to be more focused on, you know, being able to lower the cost of replacement to make it more attractive. But in the overall environment right now, I think there's a more cautious approach to where we're seeing companies spend in terms of increasing production.
You look at data from gas prices across Canada, across US, you see rig counts, you see oil prices, all different types of data. Are there any surprises that you get from all that data intake? Is there something that really sticks out to you, and maybe incredibly low gas prices? Are there trends you notice, or is there something that really kind of surprises you with all that data collection?
You know, I'd probably have to sit and think on that for a while. Sometimes you look at so many numbers that you don't often get to the chance to, hey, this is interesting. I mean, you know, going back a couple of weeks, you know, I look a lot at refined products like gasoline and diesel. There have been a couple surprises, but they're localized. One of those surprises being, given the drastic decrease in prices, especially in the U.S. Midwest, prices last year were hovering at about $5.30 a gallon, and some of these areas were, you know, $1.80 lower than last year. PADD 2 gasoline inventories, for example, are at the tightest level that they've ever been for this time of year. So I think that a lot of Americans may wrongly believe that given a drastic decrease in prices, that they would expect that, hey, supply has got to be much better than it was a year ago. But some of those problems are still right there. You know, we're just a couple events potentially away from seeing a big rally in oil and gasoline, right? And supply has been challenged. It still is. As I mentioned, inventory levels are not lavish. The biggest change is coming on the demand side, where consumers are not buying as much in the U.S. and certainly China. You know, jet fuel demand has really made a resurgence this year. Last year, it was more about the road trip, the summer road trip. Gasoline demand was pretty strong last year. This year, it seems like it's going to be less the road trip and more, you know, international travel, because over the last year, international travel restrictions have really eased. They were certainly lagging behind. So jet fuel demand is kind of the bright spot. But, you know, speaking about middle of the distillate, middle of the barrel products like distillate, diesel demand, you know, is kind of telling a different story right now with diesel demand that has been consistently weak. You know, we got a mild winter, and that's been enough to turn diesel prices really on their head, which has given a lot of relief to truckers that have been getting hit by less demand for logistics and retail movement. So, you know, surprises jet fuel to the upside, and some of the time gasoline supplies that do remain rather tight. Some other, you know, surprises, I would say several refineries in their quarterly earnings reports have indicated, you know, some incremental increase in refining capacity, Citgo being one of those, a surprising increase at its Lake Charles refinery, as well as an extremely high utilization rate at its refinery in Lamont. So, you know, we've been able to see some of these refineries squeezing even more product out of their facilities without announcing major products. That was probably something that I wouldn't have expected this year.
On the other hand, Nassim Taleb would say, it's easy to get drowned in data. We collect way too much data, and that in reality, it's randomness. Have you been able to draw meaningful conclusions from all the data you guys collect, or is it all randomness, or is it somewhere in the middle?
I mean, it's about finding the diamond in the rough, right? You look through so much data, and it's about finding the diamond in the rough, the story that nobody's looking at, right? Because a lot of us have the macro story down. You know, we look at the same places, China, the United States, refineries, oil. It's about finding that diamond in the rough, that one, you know, set of numbers that hides amongst many others, right? And there is so much data that you really have to be looking at it from multiple angles, you know, potentially dozens of different angles to find that story that you may be overlooking. And that's oftentimes hard to find. It may be buried, you know, several reports deep. It's always hard to find a fresh angle that other people aren't already aware of. And that's the problem. You have mounds and mounds of data. It's going to be harder to find, you know, the story outside of that data. But we look at a lot of prices. You know, things have been pretty quiet this year, which has been, you know, kind of good news for the average motorist. It's, I wouldn't say a blah year, but after last year, right, I think we're catching up on a little bit of downtime. The market's not as volatile this year as it was last year. But there you know, can always be a potential story that comes out of nowhere, you know, a story about refinery capacity or about, you know, demand. That's something we also look at is gasoline demand with our Pay with Gas Buddy card. And demand has been pretty soft this summer. A little bit disappointing. But again, you know, a lot of that right now is potentially temporary simply because of central banks that are really putting the pressure on with rising interest rates and the Canadian central bank as well, a couple of weeks ago, you know, surprisingly and unexpectedly raising interest rates. So that's been the wild card. And you know, those that follow interest rates, it's going to be interesting to see when, how long, and when we will start to see central banks cutting rates, because that really could bring out a spending consumer again. And that could eventually, if not handled delicately, that could contribute to a rally in energy prices simply because, you know, when people get out there and spend, when interest rates come down, it contributes to economic growth. And so much of the Canadian American economies are tied to hydrocarbons, gasoline and diesel, that any increase in growth in the economy is going to contribute an increase in growth to refined products as well. So it's going to be a really tough balancing act for central banks to start loosening monetary policy because it could contribute to a rise in demand.
The great thing about GasBuddy.com is it's very micro. You're getting real-time gas prices and there are no, I guess, macro narratives to worry about, and the value of the tools that it's gas prices in your hand right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially since COVID, when people were looking for any, you know, very quick reacting sign to the economy, that demand data has really come in handy, right? Because gasoline demand is a great metric for, you know, strength in the economy, consumer sentiment. If people are feeling better, they go out, travel, right? Whether it's road trips or something else, buying more packages on Amazon, it all contributes to higher demand. So having a set of data that, you know, is as close to real time as you can get. I mean, there's still some entities out there that, you know, do pricing surveys that are multiple weeks old before they're put out there. So really, you know, in this day and age, everyone expects basically real time data, right? And that's been the power of our data set is basically, as we've been talking, we've probably gotten 500,000 price reports, and we've probably gotten, you know, several thousand transactions on our Pay with Gas Buddy card that we can look at and basically real time.
Well, that's a great summary of GasBuddy.com. Covers the waterfront and what the business is and how you think about things. If the listener wanted to learn more about the company, obviously they'll find you at GasBuddy.com, but they can also find you on Twitter too.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at GasBuddyGuy, always sharing some of the unique data. When a story does arise, when we do find some interesting perspectives, that's where I generally share them. Or I'm on Substack, GasBuddyGuy.substack.com for some of the longer pieces. You know, we always go through EIA reports, and on Mondays, we always give an update on fuel prices. So, Twitter's probably the greatest, right? Because there's such a quick turnaround. If there's something interesting, I can just spit it out right on Twitter.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Trevor. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode. If you liked what you heard, check out rosebros.ca, where we will have upcoming shows. Until next time, happy coffee drinking.